It's about 7 past the hour. Do you know what today is? There was some breaking news here just a moment ago. I heard from NBC that President Obama must have read my mini-blog today and read the editorial in the New York Times from which I drew most of the energy for my mini-blog today at MikeMolloy.com. But it crossed the wire that President Obama tomorrow is going to announce federal health benefits, you know, insurance, health insurance for same-sex partners, same-sex couples that work for the government. Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away, right? Yeah, today is June 16th, right? Do you know what that is? All right, let's do this. Stately, a plump Buck Mulligan came from the stairhead bearing a bowl of lather on which a mirror and a razor lay crossed. A yellow dressing gown, ungirdled, was sustained gently behind him by the mild morning air. He held the bowl aloft and intoned, "In trollibo ad altre dei." Halted, he peered down the dark winding stairs and called up coarsely, "Come up, Kinch! Come up, you fearful Jesuit!" Solemnly, he came forward and mounted the round gunrest. He faced about and blessed gravely thrice the tower, the surrounding country, and the awaking mountains. Then, catching sight of Stephen Dedalus, he bent towards him and made rapid crosses in the air, gulping in his throat and shaking his head. Stephen Dedalus, displeased and sleepy, leaned his arms on the top of the staircase and looked coldly at the shaking, gurgling face that blessed him, equine in its length, and at the light, untonsured hair, grained and hued like pale oak. Buck Mulligan peeped an instant under the mirror and then covered the bowl smartly. "Back to barracks," he said sternly. He added in a preacher's tone, "For this, O dearly beloved, is the genuine Christine, body and soul and blood and own." Slow music, please. Shut your eyes, gents. One moment. A little trouble about those white corpuscles. Silence, all. Right? This is Bloomsday. The 105th anniversary. Okay, just for the hell of it, I was thinking today when I was, you know, I'd go swim my laps. Usually, well, Molly's at day camp and Kathy's off terrorizing the village down here. And so I'm swimming the laps and I was thinking, you know, there is so much horror going on right now. I mean, every place you turn, so many things to try to understand or talk about or find someone who has insight into it, you know, somebody somewhere on the web will help me understand this stuff. And so I'm swimming laps and in the pool by myself, and it was about 10:30 this morning, and at that hour of the morning, half of our community pool here is still in shade because of these huge oak trees and cottonwood trees and what are those other ones? The ones that bloom up, Kathy? The big blossoms, Bradford pear trees. All of the, you know, and it keeps a third or half of the pool in shade until probably around noon. And at this time of year, the pool is still kind of chilly. But I'm in there swimming laps back and forth. And it occurred to me that the function of this program, I've often said this program has no meaning, no function whatsoever. It's kind of like a Seinfeld episode. There is no plot to this program. There is no order to this program. There's no meaning to this program. Nothing at all. It's just a bunch of people, hopefully a bunch, who get together in the evening, depending on where you're hearing this program. Could be early evening or late evening. And, you know, just kind of discuss or hash over or for some odd reason listen to me go on and on and on and on about this stuff. And I do appreciate your patience in that, but or your perseverance or whatever it is. But it occurred to me when I was swimming today, and what's the point? That maybe instead of worrying about the issue between the Israelis and the Palestinians that you and I are never, A, never going to solve, B, never see the solution. Instead of worrying about what is going on in Iran that you and I will, A, never fully understand, or B, probably never see an acceptable outcome, the situation in Pakistan, Iraq, North Korea, Venezuela. Did you know there was a big meeting going on in Russia yesterday and today and tomorrow and a couple of days, I guess, where U.S. was told to stay away? It's a meeting about finance, and it's attended by China, India, I think Pakistan, Iran, Russia. And the purpose of the meeting is to decide not to use the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency any longer. And to me, you know, when I got the article today, I thought, so what? I mean, I don't know what that means. And then I read about it and I realized what it means is we're kind of on the razor's edge here. On one side, this country on the one side is utter, absolute financial collapse. On the other side, if that collapse occurs, is a degradation of the society into a situation that you and I and our grandparents and their grandparents and their grandparents never could have anticipated what happened to this country. And we're right on the razor's edge. It depends on what happens at this meeting in Russia. And I believe the meeting is held in the city where the where Tsar Nicholas and his family were taken to be executed. A little poetry there, wouldn't you think? So I'm thinking about this today while I'm swimming laps, and I'm thinking, you know, why do we, you and I, try to talk about these big issues on this program every night? There's not a damn thing we can do. And we really don't need to vent about this stuff. We can block it. You know, we can just deny that this stuff is having any effect on us at all. Reports I heard today from who? Some government a booklet has come out that global warming is here. I mean, for real. For real. They even had maps showing what's going to happen very quickly to South Florida, to the Mississippi Gulf Coast, weather reports projected for the Midwest. I mean, just on and on. So I started thinking maybe what we ought to do on this program is just to get away from this stuff. Just completely get away from it. Get away from, hear me out. Get away from the politics. Get away from all the chaos and weirdness. And just kind of, I don't know, talk about things that are not quite as fraught with danger and apocalyptic stuff as what we normally talk about, and talk about something else, and spend more time, this would be directed to me, more time taking phone calls about lighter issues. I don't know, just kind of, you know, play some play some Dixieland jazz or... I don't know. I don't know. I'm just thinking about it and never did come to a conclusion. Past the hour. Well, I have an idea for tonight's program, if you don't mind. Let me see how long I can go here without getting really... No, it's not going to work. Roxanne writes in regarding this plan. Okay, let's do movies on Monday, movie reviews on Monday, record reviews on Tuesday, exchange recipes on Wednesday. Thursdays we'll talk about relationships, and on Fridays? No, that's not exactly what I have in mind, but I guess what's happening with me, maybe it's not happening with any of you, being the dedicated problem solvers that you all are. But what is happening to me is I'm starting to realize, again, I think I realized this several times in the past 50 years, but this time for real, that this stuff that we talk about on this program is literally unsolvable. I mean, there are no solutions. So, okay, we're not looking for solutions. That was never the point of this program. I said years ago, the point of the program is just to talk about what has been going on during the day. But I've noticed a change in some of the emails that I'm getting, to the point where a lot of you who listen to this program have just about had it. I mean, really. It, you know, on the one hand, we've got John Ensign cheating on his wife and Sarah Palin screaming about David Letterman. On the other hand, we have the North Koreans threatened to dump nukes somewhere. Where? South Korea? The healthcare stuff. Did you see the video today of Barack Obama catching a fly, smashing a fly while he was being interviewed for NBC? Then the Iranian, what is it, a revolution, an upheaval going on, and nobody can get any information through normal channels, so it's all coming via cell phones, although they're trying to shut those down. Twitter tweets, YouTube, any way the news can get out, who knows what's going on. Meanwhile, Netanyahu is threatening to do this, but the thing that is really kind of freaky tonight is what's going on. Is it Yekaterinburg, Russia? Yekaterinburg? I believe it's this. I don't know if that's right pronunciation or not, but I think it's the city where Tsar Nicholas and his wife and children were taken. To await execution by the revolutionaries back in 1917? But the meeting that's going on there. Now, I got two very interesting takes on that today. First, Prairie Two, our economics correspondent, whose point of view on that I'm going to share with you in a second. But the more scary one, I was thinking about using this as Uncle Mike's Story Corner, is from Chris Hedges via Bob Alexander. Chris Hedges writing at truthdig.com, I think a day before yesterday about this meeting. So I think what I'm going to do is this. We have a break coming here in a minute. When we come back from the break, I'm going to share with you what Prairie 2 had to say about it, and then we'll move on to what Chris Hedges had to say about it. The reports coming from Iran, as reported LA Times, the report is starting to read like a novel or a screenplay. This is what Jeffrey Fleischman writes. Footage of burning cars, masked boys, and bloody protesters in Iran is playing across the Middle East, captivating Arab countries where repressive regimes have for years been arresting political bloggers and cyberspace dissidents. Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and other Sunni nations have tense relations with President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and the Shiite-led theocracy ruling Iran. But they don't want protests in Tehran to inspire similar democratic fervor in their countries, especially the merging of Facebook and Twitter with a potent opposition leader like Iran's presidential challenger, Mir Hossein Mousavi. The Middle East is witnessing Iran slip into a guerrilla-style internet and Twitter game of strategies and slogans pecked out by protesters attempting to outflank a government that has largely shut down communication outlets, leaving the nation breathless on snippets of text and stealthily uploaded pictures. Woo! Tweets by Stop Ahmadi are both philosophical and tense. Quote, in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act, over and out, end quote. Quote, girl shot in Tehran, end quote. Persian Kiwis tweets list updates of police movements and arrests. Quote, our street is quiet now. We cannot move tonight, but must move ASAP when dawn starts, end quote. Iran is offering an intriguing glimpse into how years of disillusionment can suddenly leap from cafes and university campuses to a national revolt where dueling political voices and agendas square off with banners, rhetoric, and allegations of election fraud. It is a mix of political action, democratic expression, shorthand typed,
Lullaby. It's Mike Malone.
Yeah, soothing bedtime memory. Or soothing bedtime lullaby. It is about 25 before the hour. From Prairie 2, he writes, nothing gets your attention like a brick upside the head. B-R-I-C, brick. In this case, it's a meeting of Brazil, Russia, India, and China. B-R-I-C. These are the major non-European industrial powers anchored by the world's only superpower, China. The rest of the countries of South America, Africa, and Asia are more than willing to align with them as their trade continues to shift away from the U.S. and Europe. At their summit in Russia this week, they refused to allow the U.S. to even observe the proceedings. The major focus of this meeting was how they will proceed with the elimination of the U.S. dollar as the international reserve currency. In the past 6 months, these countries have moved aggressively toward trade among themselves without the use of dollars. Now that this has been set in motion, there's almost no way to stop it. The only thing holding it back is China's reluctance to change. Once they are fully committed, either by choice or by cascading events, the avalanche will be unstoppable. This will make the dollar worthless for international trade and trigger either hyperinflation or crushing deflation or alternating waves of both here at home. The assumption is that the standard of living of Americans would drop 20% overnight because that is the percentage of our economy that is made up by trade deficit. It's not likely that it would stop there, since we are not only consumers, that we not only consume imports, but imports are completely integrated into every aspect of our economy. Everything from car parts to surgical supplies are imported. And many things that are linchpins of our economy are exclusively imported. The turmoil that this could produce has no large-scale precedent. With almost no Americans having any sense of ownership in our society, the reaction will be a feeling of hopelessness and an every-man-for-himself mentality. The crazies on the right have been priming themselves for this sort of apocalyptic collapse for 40 years, and will have no doubt who is to blame. Those that don't know who to blame will get a fair and balanced list on Fox News. Watch your back. Pray too. Woo! Spooky! Go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. And then this from Chris Hedges, who is one of my favorite scary writers. I don't think there's ever been anything Chris Hedges has ever written that hasn't just caused icy fingers up and down my spine. He's a smart guy. And as Bob says, he lays it out about as clearly as anyone can. Bob writes, "Soon this country is going to be one great big real-time disaster movie, and we're all extras. You know, the crowd of people who get stomped into paste under Godzilla's foot. Those guys." Okay, go ahead and giggle, Malloy. Chris Hedges writes, "This week marks the end of the dollar's reign as the world's reserve currency. It marks the start of a terrible period of economic and political decline in the United States, and it signals the last gasp of the American imperium. That's over. It's not coming back. And what is to come will be very, very painful. Barack Obama and the criminal class on Wall Street, aided by a corporate media that continues to peddle fatuous gossip and trash talk as news, while we endure the greatest economic crisis in our history, may have fooled us, but the rest of the world knows we are bankrupt. And these nations are damned if they are going to continue to prop up an inflated dollar and sustain the massive federal budget deficits, swollen to over $2 trillion, which fund America's imperial expansion in Eurasia and our system of casino capitalism. They have us by the throat. They're about to squeeze." There are meetings being held Monday and Tuesday in Yekaterinburg, Russia, formerly Sverdlovsk, among Chinese President Hu Jintao, Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, and other top officials of the Six Nations Shanghai Cooperation Organization. The United States, which asked to attend, was denied admittance. "Watch what happens there carefully. The gathering is, in the words of economist Michael Hudson, the most important meeting of the 21st century so far. It is the first formal step by our major trading partners to replace the dollar as the world's reserve currency. If they succeed, the dollar will dramatically plummet in value. The cost of imports, including oil, will skyrocket. Interest rates will climb, and jobs will hemorrhage at a rate that will make the last few months look like boom times. State and federal services will be reduced or shut down for lack of funds. The United States will begin to resemble the Weimar Republic or Zimbabwe. President Obama, endowed by many with the qualities of a savior, will suddenly look pitiful, inept, and weak. And the rage that has kindled a handful of shootings and hate crimes in the past few weeks will engulf vast segments of a disenfranchised and bewildered working and middle class. The people of this class will demand vengeance, radical change, order, and moral renewal, which an array of proto-fascists from the Christian right to the goons who disseminate hate talk on Fox News will assure the company of the country they will impose." I called Michael Hudson, who has an article in Monday's Financial Times called "The Yekaterinburg Turning Point, de-dollarization, and the ending of America's financial military hegemony. Hudson writes, the meeting in Yekaterinburg may become known not only as the death place of the czars, but of the American empire as well. His article is worth reading, along with John Lanchester's disturbing expose of the world's banking system titled It's Finished, which appeared in the May 28th issue of the London Review of Books. Hudson told me, Chris writes, this means the end of the dollar. It means China, Russia, India, Pakistan, Iran are forming an official financial and military area to get America out of Eurasia. The balance of payments deficit is mainly military in nature. Half of America's discretionary spending is military. The deficit ends up in the hands of foreign banks, central banks. They don't have any choice but to recycle the money to buy U.S. government debt. The Asian countries have been financing their own military encirclement. They have been forced to accept dollars that have no chance of being repaid. They are paying for America's military aggression against them. They want to get rid of this. End quote. China, as Michael Hudson points out, has already struck bilateral trade deals with Brazil and Malaysia to denominate their trade in China's yuan rather than the dollar, pound, or euro. Russia promises to begin trading in the ruble and local currencies. The governor of China's central bank has openly called for the abandonment of the dollar as reserve currency, suggesting in its place the use of the International Monetary Fund's so-called special drawing rights. What the new system will be remains unclear, but the flight from the dollar has clearly begun. The goal, in the words of the Russian president, is to build a, quote, multipolar world order, end quote, which will break the economic and, by extension, military domination by the United States. China is frantically spending its dollar reserves to buy factories and property around the globe so it can unload U.S. currency. Hudson added, quote, China is trying to get rid of all the dollars they can in a trash for resources deal. They will give the dollars to countries willing to sell off the resources since America refuses to sell any of its high-tech industries, even Unocal, to the yellow peril. It realizes these dollars are going to be worthless pretty quickly, end quote. The architects of this new global exchange realize that if they break the dollar, they also break America's military domination. Our military spending cannot be sustained without this cycle of heavy borrowing. The official U.S. defense budget for fiscal year 2008 is $623 billion before we add on things like nuclear research. The next closest national military budget is China's at $65 billion, one-tenth of that, according to the Central Intelligence Agency. There are three categories of the balance of payment deficits. America imports more than it exports. This is trade. Wall Street and American corporations buy up foreign companies. This is capital movement. The third and most important balance of payment deficit for the past 50 years has been Pentagon spending abroad. It is primarily military spending that has been responsible for the balance of payments deficit for the last 50 years. To fund our permanent war economy, we have been flooding the world with dollars. We'll finish this when we come back. It's Good News Week. All right.
Yeah!
Die. Rage, Rage Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, and we're reading from something Chris Hedges has at Truth Dig today, titled The American Empire is Bankrupt, which is essentially true. I mean, there is no question about that. If that were not the case, why is everything that the Obama administration has had to float been just that, afloat? And of course, during the Bush years too. I mean, it's all smoke and mirrors. The problem is the smoke machine and the mirrors are owned by the Chinese. That's a big problem here. Anyway, the meeting in Russia by these major trading partners of the United States is a meeting to which we were not only not invited, but told, no, go do something else. The plan is to go after the dollar. And the way the dollar is poised right now, that even someone as uneducated in economics, global economics, as I am, that's not going to be very difficult. Back to Hedges. To fund our permanent war economy, we have been flooding the world with dollars. The foreign recipients turn the dollars over to their central banks for local currency. The central banks then have a problem. If a central bank does not spend the money in the United States, then the exchange rate against the dollar will go up. This will penalize exporters. This has allowed America to print money without restraint, to buy imports in foreign companies, fund our military expansion, and ensure that foreign nations like China continue to buy our treasury bonds. This cycle appears now to be over. Once the dollar cannot flood central banks and no one buys our treasury bonds, our empire collapses. The profligate spending on the military, some $1 trillion when everything is counted, that's just this year, will be unsustainable. Michael Hudson warned, quote, we will have to finance our own military spending, and the only way to do this will be to sharply cut back wage rates. So the class war is back in business. Wall Street understands that. This is why it had Bush and Obama give it $10 trillion in a huge ripoff so it can have enough money to survive. End quote. The desperate effort to borrow our way out of financial collapse has promoted a level of state intervention unseen since World War II. It has also led us into uncharted territory. Lanchester wrote in the London Review of Books, quote, we have in effect had to declare war to get us out of the hole created by our economic system. There is no model or precedent for this and no way to argue that it's all right, really, because under such and such a model of capitalism, blah, 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 there is no such model. It isn't supposed to work like this. And there is no roadmap for what's happened, end quote. Hedges goes on. The cost of daily living, from buying food to getting medical care, will become difficult for all but a few as the dollar plunges. States and cities will see their pension funds drained and finally shut down. The government will be forced to sell off infrastructure, including roads and transport, to private corporations. We will be increasingly charged by privatized utilities, think Enron, for what was once regulated and subsidized. Commercial and private real estate will be worth less than half its current value. The negative equity that already plagues 25% of American homes will expand to include nearly all property owners. It will be difficult to borrow and impossible to sell real estate unless we accept massive losses. There will be block after block of empty stores and boarded up houses. Foreclosures will be epidemic. There will be long lines at soup kitchens and many, many homeless. Our corporate-controlled media, already banal and trivial, will work overtime to anesthetize us with useless gossip, spectacles, sex, gratuitous violence, fear, and tawdry junk politics. America will be composed of a large, dispossessed underclass and a tiny, empowered oligarchy that will run a ruthless and brutal system of neo-feudalism from secure compounds. Those who resist will be silenced, many by force. We will pay a terrible price, and we will pay this price soon for the gross malfeasance of our power elite. End quote. You know what that sounds like, don't you? Yeah, it does. You know, you talk about prescient. Man, you know what I'm talking about. The reading from, Busta Rhymes that, we play every once in a while. You don't have time to play it now? I thought we'd go out on a cheery note. Oh, it's 2.5 minutes? You know, just in honor of Chris Hedges, when we come back, we ought to play that. what's it called? What is it? Extinction Level Event. Yeah, we've played that several times. Usually, kind of in jest or mockery, but today on Bloomsday, perhaps what we ought to do is play it in homage of where we are. What the U.S. capitalist / corporate / neo-fascist system has handed us. Now we understand, perhaps, those of us who had any doubts, why such a proto-Nazi as Rush Limbaugh insisted a couple of years ago that his new contract be $50 million a year for 10 years. Because once everything shakes out, his $50 million a year will probably reduce all the way down to $1 million. Oh, poor big man, right? I don't know. It's kind of humorous in a way, isn't it? Huh? Have you got your canned goods? Have you thought about the future? Jesus, I do. But only when I'm swimming. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. And in keeping with the up-tempo mood here on Bloomsday 2009, we will play for you this lovely piece from Busta Rhymes entitled Extinction Level Event.
Daddy, what's it gonna be like?
Well, sweetheart, for your sake, I hope it'll be all peaches and cream. But I'm afraid the end time is near. The cataclysmic apocalypse referred to in the scriptures of every holy book known to mankind. It will be an era fraught with boundless greed and corruption, where global monetary systems disintegrate, leaving brother to kill brother for a grain of overcooked rice. The nations of the civilized world will collapse under the oppressive weight of parasitic political conspiracies which remove all hope and optimism from their once faithful citizens. Around the globe, generations of polluters will be punished for their sins, unshielded by the ozone layer they have successfully depleted, left to bake in the searing naked rays of light. Wholesale assassinations serve to destabilize every remaining government, leaving the starving and wicked to fend for themselves. Bloodthirsty renegade cyborgs created by tax-dodging corporations wreak havoc. Pissed off androids tired of being slaves to a godless and gutless system where the rich get richer
attempt, unleash total worldwide destruction by means of nuclear holocaust, annihilating the terrified masses, leaving in its torturous wake nothing but vicious, cannibalistic, mutated, radiated, and horribly disfigured hordes of satanic killers, bent on revenge, but against whom there are so few left alive. Starvation reigns supreme, forcing unlucky survivors to eat anything and anyone in their path. Massive earthquakes crack the planet's crust like a hollow eggshell, causing unending volcanic eruptions. The creatures of the seven seas, unable to escape to certain death upon land, boil in their liquid prison. Disease encircles the earth, plagues and viruses with no known cause or cure, laying waste to whatever draws breath. And humankind, having proven itself to be nothing more than a race of ruthless scavengers, fall victim to merciless attack at the hands of interplanetary alien tribes who seek to conquer our charred remains. This is extinction level event.
Wow, that's cool. I can't hardly wait.
You don't have to, because here it is. Because here it is. Because here it is.
It always, yeah, I like to play that sometimes in the weekend, in the middle of the night when, you know, I can't sleep, and I'll get up and come into the studio and put that on, put on the headphones and crank, you know, peg it, the view meter all the way to the right, and which is one of the reasons I'm going deaf, huh? Okay, a couple of emails here, and then we'll move on wherever tonight's program takes us. Oh, and by the way, program note, Friday will be a rebroadcast of one of the programs here. And then all next week, Brad Friedman will be sitting in while I and Kathy and the kid go to Florida and visit the grandchildren and a couple of my grown daughters so that we can take one last look at the west coast of Florida, see what it looks like, because with the global warming announcement today, pretty much most of the west coast of Florida is going to, you know, just... Okay. This is from Greg in Des Moines, Iowa, whose subject line says, "The dollar, the crash, and hookers." He writes, "Mike, a recent emailer just spelled out the apocalypse for the U.S. after the BRIC countries stop using the U.S. dollar. I, for one, am going to sell my city stock and invest all my money into velvet handcuffs, whips, and hot-looking hookers. Once all of those moral leftists and rightists and preachers try to right the country, they will need some sort of release, and I and my gals will be there for them and the country. Can anyone say Elliot Spitzer or David Vitter? Sincerely, Greg, Des Moines, Iowa." See, this is what I love about America. I mean, so many people here are just always thinking ahead. That's right. If, you know, if the world hands you lemons, make pastry or something. I don't know. This is from the Foxhole Atheist, who writes, "Hi, Mike. All you are saying is true, and there is one simple fact that no one is talking about. And that is, without American rice, China starves to death." Really? I didn't know that. "Regardless of what the world currency is called, America will quickly build a reserve of it. Here's the problem. The right is going to use this upheaval to end democracy here. Liberals need to start buying guns and ammo, just like the right, along with canned goods and a portable water filter. When liberals wake up or start getting shot by right-wingers, there are thousands of highly trained ex-soldiers ready to train you. Mike, the one thing you repeat that is dead wrong is this, that we the people have no power. Also, there are a lot more of us than them. One lone person is the most feared weapon on the battlefield. Ask any armored crew member." Foxhole Atheist. Boy, this is exciting talk, isn't it? I mean, do you believe this, Kathy? We're sitting here talking about... this? I'm amazed. William writes from Hollywood, "Mike, after hearing about the dollar collapse," and then in parentheses he writes, "Jesus!" "My first thought was working from home, which now means keeping a lot of ammo in reach and protecting the canned goods in the garden, if one has these, which does not seem much like less stress, but it is working at home. Or buy gold and have a mold and a source of heat ready to melt the gold to pour into the mold to make bullets. Don't forget to stock up on gunpowder. Oh, my God. All right, time for a little story here. This came from a Vector 56. And Vector 56 also sent some photos with this, which I'd love to show you, but I cannot. He writes, while sitting in a Denny's eating breakfast in Gallup, New Mexico, I happened to glance out the window to behold a woman who looked to be in her mid-60s rummaging through a trash can looking for, I assumed, cans to redeem. I brought it to my wife's attention, and while we were talking, the young, overly polite waiter returned to our table bearing coffee. Corey, my wife, being the emphatic, compassionate RN BSN that she is, commented on the callousness of this poor woman living out of a shopping cart and sifting through trash cans. The young, overly polite but not too empathic waiter looked at the woman in question and said she must want to live that way. That was all Corey needed to basically bombard this poor lad with a socialist manifesto. After we finished our meal, Corey and I walked over to the lady, who by now had found a nice spot in the shade to rest. I grabbed my camera and faded into the background while Corey, the RN and BSN, upon approaching the lady, went into nurse mode. She checked her lymph nodes for infection. She examined her hands for arthritis, basically gave her the closest thing this poor abandoned sick woman has had to medical examination, I assume, in a long time. Corey gave her $5 while asking a few basic health-related questions. The woman seemed to be in pure agony. She repeated over and over, "This damn tooth is killing me." Put yourself in her place, homeless, old, unwashed, in constant pain. Now add a toothache. During the Reagan Revolution, most of the federal funds supporting mental institutions were cut. These cuts had a ripple effect, closing most state-run institutions. Most, if not all, of the mentally ill were literally turned out into the streets. This poor woman, like many others living out of shopping carts, roaming the streets, talking to themselves, invisible to most so-called normal people. Single-payer health care would have provided this poor woman with the mental health services she needs, the dental care to save her from the tooth pain. I am not a big fan of Jesus Christ, but I think he would have been for single payer. Didn't he say, "What you do to the least of my brothers or sisters, you do to me"? Everybody in, nobody out. Photos attached. And I looked at the photos, and sure enough, there is Corey and Mr. Vector 56. Well, he's not in the photos. He took them. Very interesting. Stick around. We have more to entertain and delight you tonight. I'm Mike Malloy.
You're still out here. He has been told to say it clear, to say it cool. It's over. It ain't going any further.
Where is the outrage? Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. You okay? How you doing tonight? It's turning into a show for masochists tonight, right? Nah, just kidding. Just kidding. I've just got to do this because the irony is so thick that, you know, you could walk on it. Senator John Ensign, the senator from Nevada, had a big mea culpa tonight. He fessed up to having an extramarital affair with the wife of one of his staff members? I mean, good Lord. So, where's the damn story? Ensign, of course, was, he's one of these born-again Christian religious right freaks that, you know, is just so quick to criticize and demonize and condemn. As a matter of fact, the Washington Post's Chris Saliza reports that, reported about this in the Post, and the affair was with a campaign staffer who was married to an employee in Ensign's Senate office. Ensign flew back to Las Vegas to make the public announcement. God, I hope his wife wasn't standing next to him. Now, since his election to the Senate in 2000, Ensign has been a leading conservative. Well, of course, a voice who demanded the resignation of former Idaho Senator Larry Craig. Remember that event about a year and a half ago? Ensign called Craig a disgrace after Craig was arrested in the men's room for disorderly conduct charges. But when Senator David Vitter, the Republican from Louisiana, acknowledged having an affair, our beloved Senator Ensign didn't call on him to resign. Gee, I wonder why. Ensign has also been an ardent opponent of gay marriage. Because, you know, gay marriage is a threat to traditional marriage, right? It isn't a cheating son of a bitch like John Ensign. It is a happy married couple who happen to be of the same sex. They are the threat, right, John? Anyway, in February 2004, John Ensign announced his support for an amendment to the Constitution that would have defined marriage as a union between a man and a woman. Ensign said the amendment, which ultimately failed, was necessary to protect the institution of marriage. Now, here's what he said, quote, "Sadly, the effort to redefine marriage against the wishes of a majority of people is, with the help from activist judges," don't you love that term, "succeeding in order to defend the institution of marriage, uphold the rights of individual states, and maintain the will of the people. I believe we are compelled to amend our country's constitution." The effort to pass a constitutional amendment reaffirming marriage as being between a man and a woman only is being undertaken strictly as a defense of marriage against the attempt to redefine it and in the process weaken it. Marriage is an extremely important institution in this country, and protecting it is, in my mind, worth the extraordinary step of amending our Constitution. You filthy rat bastard right-wing Republican hypocritical son of a bitch. Did I leave anything out that I can say on radio? God, people like this guy make me sick. Now, back in 1998, while he was running for a Nevada Senate seat against Harry Reid, our lovely Mr. Ensign here insisted that President Clinton resign because Clinton admitted his affair with former White House intern Monica Lewinsky. This is what Ensign said then, quote, I came to the conclusion recently, and frankly, it's because of what he put his whole cabinet through and what he has put the whole country through. I have come to the conclusion that Mr. Clinton should quit. He has no credibility left. Really? Really? Now, here's some more quotes from him from April of this year. I believe that marriage should be defined as that between one man and one woman. You want to do what is ideal for children. And all the studies show the ideal for children is to be in a household with a father and a mother. What about your girlfriend? This is what he said a couple of years ago to Bush. Mr. President, or not to Bush, to the President of the Senate. I rise today to speak on a topic that is very important. That is the preservation of the most important structure in our society, marriage. You son of a bitch. You silver-haired, silver-tongued wastrel, you. Oh, my God. Bill Clinton should resign, and Larry Craig is a hoe. What about you? What about you, Mr. Ensign? Of course, when David Vitter got caught with his appendage in the wrong socket, Mr. Ensign didn't say anything about that, did he? He also said a year or so ago, there are too many people who that paint with a broad brush that we're all corrupt, we're all amoral, and having these kinds of things happen, whether it's a Republican or Democratic senator, we certainly have had plenty of Democrat scandals in the past. We need people who are in office who will hold themselves to a little higher standard. John Ensign, today's Republican, caught with his appendage in the wrong receptacle. We'll be back after the break.
In the name of the Lord, Mama just want to hear him say, my papa was a rolling stone, my son.
Dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. A little bit more on Ensign, and then I'm not going to talk about it anymore. It just creeps me out, these guys. They really do, because of their public stance on everything that has to do with sex, whether it is, and usually it's about gay folk or someone who has an extramarital affair or, you know, and this holier than thou attitude. And Ensign is a classic. Married with three kids. He became a born again Christian when he was at Colorado State University. There's a surprise. He and his wife were active in Promise Seekers. That's an evangelical group that insists that men are to absolutely, totally, completely, forever and ever, world without end, amen, be the dominant force inside their marriage. Oh, and it's real funny, the language they use to explain how this works. They're to gently dominate their wife with her permission or something like that. I mean, become a dominant servant. You know, it's like a militant Islam or Orthodox Judaism. You know, every one of these religions says to a woman, you ain't squat. Shut up. Sit down. Have babies. I'm going to go out and spread my seed. But don't say anything. I be the boss, you know, and it just gets a little tiresome. You know what I'm saying? If somebody wants to have an affair, go have an affair. But for Christ's sake, do you have to stand out there all the time talking about your piousness and your promise keepers and your Lord and Savior Jesus Christ? And let's make sure the queers never have a chance to do what we're doing, and that is violate our marriage contract. I mean, what kind of insanity is this? So here's this freak. And I say freak, not because he had an affair, but because of his butter wouldn't melt in his mouth piousness.
In a statement released by his office, Mr. Ensign said, quote, I take full responsibility for my actions. I know that I've deeply hurt and disappointed my wife, my children, my family, my friends, my staff, and the people of Nevada who believed in me, not just as a legislator, but as a person. I deeply regret and very sorry for my actions, end quote.
You know, I'll bet you couldn't find 10 people in Nevada who give a good goddamn about whether or not John Ensign has an affair or not. But the arrogance of these people, not only do they violate the oath they took in a church to the woman they cheated on, they also violate their contract sanctioned by the state of, I don't know, Nevada or Colorado, wherever this freak got married. You took a contract out, buddy, you lying sneak. So not only did you violate your oath to your wife, you also violated a contract that sanctioned by the state that sanctioned your marriage. It wasn't the church that issued your contract, you Republican. Mr. Ensign's wife also issued a statement reaffirming her commitment to her husband. She says, since we found out, we have worked through the situation and we have come to a reconciliation. This has been difficult on both families. With the help of our family and close friends, our marriage has become stronger. I love my husband, end quote. Harry Reid, the Democratic Majority Leader, who is Nevada senior senator, issued a statement expressing concern for his fellow Nevadan. In a statement, Harry Reid said, "This is a very personal matter. Senator Reid's thoughts..." his spokesman, John Summers, issued the statement. "This is a very personal matter. Senator Reid's thoughts are with Senator Ensign and his family as they go through this difficult time." Why don't they ever put it the way it really is? Why doesn't Harry Reid say something like, well, that's right, he's a Mormon, but why didn't he say something like, "Senator Reid's thoughts are with Senator Ensign and his family as they go through this difficult time caused by the fact that Senator Ensign couldn't keep his fly zipped, caused by the fact that Senator Ensign has no respect for the institution of marriage. To the contrary, notwithstanding his statements about denying same-sex people marriage, and also his disrespect for the contract issued by what? State of Nevada, what have you. You understand what I'm saying. You know, these mealy-mouthed statements of support from usually another man, right? Hey, listen, as Senator Ensign goes through this difficult time, you know, he certainly has my support and his family. Oh, my. He couldn't keep his pants zipped and went out and cheated on his wife. Ooh. Promise keepers. Eh? Promise keepers? Yeah. All right. Val from Las Vegas writes, "I feel compelled to tell you about Nevada's promise keeper, Mr. Ensign. I had a Pomeranian years ago, and he was losing his sight and was walking and his walking ability, so I took him to Ensign." Let me digress. Ensign is a veterinarian. "I took him to Ensign before he went to Washington. Long story short, the dog had water on the brain, and Ensign took x-rays but never took a head x-ray. Funny is, a Pomeranian is a pretty small dog, and Ensign was a lousy veterinarian. Also, I never liked Ensign when he asked for public donations for a recount the first time he ran for office. Hopefully, his affair will end his political career here in Nevada." From Val. And Ray in Scottsdale, Arizona writes, "So Mike, the Coming Dark Age in America show, your show tonight, is a keeper. After all these years, my Wellbutrin XL prescription is earning its keep." Ray in Scottsdale. Way to go, Ray. I heard Wellbutrin, though. Doesn't that make you crazy and make you send emails to talk show hosts and stuff, huh? I don't know. I do know this, though. The racism, the Obamas are really taking it on the chin. First, the freak in South Carolina the other day who said that an escaped gorilla from the zoo over there was probably one of Michelle Obama's ancestors. And then the chairman of Tennessee's Democratic Party wants a Republican legislative aide fired for sending out what is referred to as a reprehensible email. Have you seen this one? It's a collage containing portraits of the previous 43 U.S. presidents. I think I mentioned this the other night. In their usual presidential poses. You know those pictures. You see them all the time. But number 44, the one for Barack Obama, is pitch black. And there are two cartoonish big white eyes staring out. Somebody named Sherry Goforth, an administrative assistant to State Senator Dianne Black, a Republican of Gallatin, Tennessee, has admitted she sent the email May the 28th with the title, "Historical Keepsake Photo," she said. She said, without elaborating, that she mistakenly sent it to the wrong list of people. Oh, damn, I didn't mean that. I'm a Christian. I didn't mean that to go out there to everybody. I got nothing against Negroes. I really don't. I go to church. My old man's a promise keeper. I made all that up, but can't you just hear her say that? There was no comment from the White House as of this afternoon. Of course not. You know, you don't mention dog crap on the sidewalk. When you see it, you just step around it. The state senator, Dianne Black, rebuked Goforth. Rebuked. Isn't that a fundamentalist term? Don't you love that? I rebuke you! Black rebuked Goforth but didn't fire her. Senator Black said today, quote,
I want to be sure that everyone understands that the communication was sent without my knowledge. It absolutely does not represent the beliefs or opinions of my office. I want to be very clear about that, end quote. Your office? Your office has a belief or opinion? Really? Do the lamps and chairs and the switches and doors, they all have opinions? God damn, that must be awful fun in your office up there, Senator Black. Your office doesn't believe this stuff. Believe what stuff, dear? What doesn't your office believe? The two great big old white eyes staring out from a black background is supposed to symbolize the President of the United States because you know he is a Negro, right? But that doesn't represent the beliefs of your office. Well, well, well. The senator said that as soon as she found out about the email, she consulted the legislature's human resources office. God damn, she didn't know what to do. Well, let me see. What am I going to do? I mean, my administrative assistant just slammed the President of the United States with a racist, filthy, putrid depiction that belongs in your state there, Tennessee, in the 1950s, you psychopath, and all you people that wear your pointy white hoods and throw your Confederate flags around and talk about the Jews and the Negroes, huh? That's where it belongs, and you had to go check with the Human Resources Department of your state Senate, right? Legislature. Sorry, jerk. Senator Black said, Ms. Goforth did get a verbal reprimand as well as a very strongly worded reprimand written that was put in her file that if this should ever occur again, she will be terminated. Senator Black added, this is an employee who has had a stellar record. She has worked in state government for more than 20 years and has a clean record. And you know what? We followed policy. And that's what you do when someone breaks the rules. You follow policy. Oh, my God. Let me go get a bicarb. We'll be back in a second.
Time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Okay. Isn't he sweet? Isn't that a sweet little boy, huh? He stands up there with his little blonde hair slicked down in his little Buster Brown collar and just sings that song. I just love him. Back to what happened in Tennessee with Ms. Goforth, Sherry Goforth, Administrative Assistant, State Senator Diane Black, Republican of Gallatin, Tennessee. CNN left a phone message for Ms. Goforth, and it wasn't returned, of course. The State Democratic Party Chairman in Tennessee, Chip Forrester, in a statement posted on the party's website, said, quote, is this indicative of what Senate Republicans think about our Commander-in-Chief, end quote. He went on to say, quote, I'm calling on Senator Black to reject this racist smear and fire the staffer who, on state government time, on state government computers, using a state government email account, launched this bigoted attack on our president, end quote. He went on to say, quote, keeping her on the staff would send the message that this type of behavior is condoned by the Senate Republican caucus, end quote. Well, of course. Come on, this is Tennessee. These are Republicans. These are white people. Are you kidding me? Come on. Forrester added, this email is reprehensible, insults the office of the president, and is embarrassing to all Tennesseans regardless of political party, end quote. Not true, Mr. Forrester. Very few Republicans in Tennessee are embarrassed by this at all. You know what their attitude is? God damn it, just a joke. I mean, he is Negro, isn't he? Just a joke.
Hell, she already admitted she sent it to the wrong email list. You see him there. There is the nub of the problem. She sent it to the wrong email list. Oh, anyway, Miss Goforth told Christian Grantham of the website Nashville is Talking that she had received a letter of reprimand from her superiors, but will remain on the job. Goforth told the website that she felt, quote, get this, I feel very bad about accidentally sending it to the wrong list of people. I inadvertently hit the wrong button. I'm very sick about it, and it's one of those things I can't change or take back. She is sick because she sent it to the wrong list of people. Do you understand that? As far as white Republicans in Tennessee giving a tinker's damn about whatever insult they might come up with people of color, come on, please. Give me a break. It's Tennessee. God damn it. Stop it. And Tennessee is not that different from Arkansas, which is not that different from Mississippi, which is not that different from Alabama, which is not that different from South Carolina or Georgia or Louisiana or, you know, right down the list, right?
Can I just say, oh, my God. I mean, excuse me, but the woman doesn't even have the capacity to say, you know, that really was offensive and I'm terribly sorry because obviously it was offensive and we should not be depicting the president or any person like that.
But that would be insincere, Kathy. If she felt that, she wouldn't have constructed the thing and mailed it to begin with.
So she just says, I'm sorry I sent it to the wrong person. Ain't sorry I made it up.
Of course she's not. I mean, obviously what got her in trouble was sending it to the wrong list of people, not doing it.
Exactly.
Well,
but she's still employed.
Well, of course.
Because she's got a great record.
No,
yeah, it's a great record. I love this record.
It's because she's white, Barack Obama's black, and it's Tennessee. I mean, damn. The woman in her mind and in the minds of most, not all, white Tennesseans is simply, she didn't do anything wrong. You know what she did wrong? She did what she said. She hit the wrong send button.
Al Gore's from Tennessee. It just doesn't seem possible.
I've got friends in Tennessee. So what? And some of them are white. I'm very sad about accidentally sending it to the wrong list of people. Oh, damn. So now, who do you suppose spoke out in the Tennessee legislature? That's right, black members and Democratic members of the Black and Democratic Caucus. State Representative Johnny Shaw said that Ms. Goforth should be dismissed. Shaw said, quote, I don't think a reprimand is enough. I think this lady needs to go. Mr. Shaw, she's not a lady. She's a woman. I think this lady needs to go. I don't think she should be part of the people who represent the state of Tennessee, end quote. Well, excuse me, Representative Shaw, if you want to get rid of all the white people who feel that way, damn, where are you going to put all of them? Because just damn near all but about 37 of them are going to have to leave Tennessee. Please. Shaw said, quote, I am appalled. It's despicable. It's disgusting. It should not have happened, but it does happen. It's the president of the country we're talking about, end quote. Yeah, but you got to consider the source, Representative Shaw. These are white people in Tennessee, 20 years working for state government. They're Republicans. They're Christians. They're born again. They go to church on Sunday. They wave their hands in the air. Their husbands are probably part of Promise Keepers. How is this poor woman ever going to express her true inner bigot unless she does something like this? Several other black Democratic lawmakers in the great state of Tennessee agreed Ms. Goforth should quit. State Representative John DeBerry, Jr. of Memphis, told CNN Radio, quote, the last thing we need in the state of Tennessee is to send out the impression and the image that we are still stuck in some backwater mentality and culture that feels it's okay to depict the President of the United States in that fashion, end quote. Excuse me, Representative DeBerry, are you serious? Are you serious? There's no impression. There's no image that you're stuck in some backwater mentality and culture. It's Tennessee. Just like where I live. I live in Georgia. Are you kidding me? You know what we had not more than 30 miles from the Malloy compound here? We had some old gnarly tooth racist white son of a bitch had a, what do you have, Kathy? Well, it was a gas station over here in Marietta, Georgia. And during the campaign, he took one of my daughter's favorite cartoon characters, Curious George, and had it imprinted on a t-shirt. Didn't even pay the copyright fees. And underneath it, what did he put? Vote Obama or something? And had this picture. Please! Listen, all you white people here in the South. You're white people and you're in the South. Okay? You got that? Two salient facts. That's all you need. You're white. Oh, there's one more. Your president isn't. It is 7 past the hour. We had a couple of seminal rock and rollers pass here in the past 24 hours or so. I can't believe that Bob Vogel was 75 years old. He was the guitarist for The Ventures, and if you're of a certain age, you know this music. That's from a million years ago, isn't it? The roots of rock and roll. Bob Vogel, 75 years old. And also, Barry Beckett, who was he was 66. He was one of the founders of what was referred to as the Muscle Shoals Alabama sound. He was a keyboardist who helped create this, as the New York Times says, distinctly Southern amalgamation of rhythm and blues, soul and country that became known as the Muscle Shoals sound. As a producer, he recorded a wide range of music with Bob Dylan, Kenny Chesney, Bob Seger, Dire Straits. He died, excuse me, at his home in Hendersonville, Tennessee. He was 66. And he also produced a number of artists. He produced Bob Seger's famous We Got Tonight. You remember that, don't you? How many people had just excruciating breakups to that music, right? From all that we see, why should we worry?
Still makes you cry, doesn't it?
No one will care. Look at the stars. So far away.
Barry Beckett and Bob Vogel. That great rock concert in a parallel dimension, I guess. We have an addition for podcast subscribers, people who subscribe to the program, in addition to all the other goodies that you get. After the program, after we sign off, if you stick with MikeMalloy.com web stream, we will be presenting a replay of tonight's Head On with Bob Kincaid from the Head On Radio Network. Most of you have heard me talk about Bob Kincaid and Head On Radio Network. He's on about the same time we are. Yes.
It's not just for podcast subscribers. It's for anyone who listens to the live stream.
Oh, is it on?
Yeah, it's just live. It's not podcast subscribers, actually. It's people who stream on the internet. I just wanted to toss that out there.
Oh, okay.
But if you'd like to become a podcast subscriber, there's never been a better time.
Yeah.
Just in time for Father's Day. Father's Day is this Sunday. 25 cents a show. Give the gift of Malloy to your
dad.
Is
this the commercial? This is the commercial. Anyway, Bob Kincaid, you've heard me talk about him. You all helped him get one of those scholarships to Washington, D.C. for this, what the hell was it, convocation of liberal Websters, I believe. Anyway, he's the only born and bred Southern voice in liberal talk radio. How about that? Huh? And he comes to you from the heart of West Virginia coal country. So this will be a regular feature. So stick around. MikeMalloy.com. When the program is over tonight, this program, just stay on the web stream and listen to Bob Kincaid. You'll like. I'm telling you, you'll like it. It's a different kind of program. Now, here's the thing. You got to promise me if you do this, you'll only listen to his rebroadcast on the web stream, because he's on at the same time we are. I don't think he's on for 3 hours, but he's on for an hour or two. But he's got a great show, and the Head On Radio Network on the internet is something you ought to be tuned into. We are sorely limited, aren't we, with truly liberal talk show hosts. Our numbers are decreasing almost daily. So give Bob Kincaid a listen. Won't cost you a thing. Oh, here's some, is this good news? Yeah, you know, the worst of the worst, the Guantanamo detainees, the ones who are left there, the ones that Dick Cheney, the worst of the worst of the worst. We talked a little bit yesterday, or I blogged about it yesterday, about four of them have been taken by Bermuda, where these four worst of the worst of the worst are going for a swim in the ocean and eating ice cream and walking the streets of Georgetown, Bermuda, having a pretty good time. And people are coming up and shaking their hands. And they were Uyghurs from Western China, whom the Chinese labeled as terrorists. They really, you can argue, weren't. But then again, one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter, right? And the U.S. just didn't know what to do with them. Oh, my goodness, what are we going to do with these four Uyghurs? So we gave them to Bermuda, not unlike the way we used to shift slaves around. Here, you can take my boys, and they'll help bring in your cotton and give me yours when, you know, that sort of thing. So we sent them away. Now Italy has agreed to take three more from the U.S. prison camp at Guantanamo. That's according to President Obama. This is from the BBC. The agreement, after talks with Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, Mr. Obama said, quote, "I thank the Prime Minister for his support of our policy of closing Guantanamo." And he went on to say, this is the president talking, "This is not just talk. Italy has agreed to accept three specific detainees. The detainees' identities have not been disclosed." Yada, yada, yada. So, thank goodness for the courage of the Bermudans, and thank goodness for the courage of the Italians,
because we are a bunch of goddamn cowards, and we just wet our pants. At least the Republicans among us do every time we talk about bringing these terrorists to the United States for trial, incarceration, or,
well, you know, if they go through our legal system and they're found not guilty, then what?
They get freed? But you see, these are Republicans. These are Republicans. Oh, man. And regarding our high-value detainees and our torture camps, the Washington Post is reporting this. I can barely get my mind around this, but we're coming up on a break. So we'll talk about it in a second. Abu Zubaydah, right? Abu Zubaydah, you know, the number three Al-Qaeda terrorist. Remember all that that came out of Bush's mouth? Abu Zubaydah, the guy that was subjected to 83 waterboarding incidents, right? Huh? Guess what? Yeah, you're way ahead of me. And also, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who was waterboarded, what, 170 times or something? There's something about him that I want to share with you, too, and we'll do that when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Kincaid is on for 3 hours before our show comes on. He's on from 6 to 9 Eastern Time weekdays at headonradionetwork.com, headonradionetwork.com. I have to catch Bob when I do catch him on the replay, because from 6 to 9 Eastern Time is really crunch time here in the Malloy compound. But anyway, excuse me, good news for anyone who is not familiar. And if you're listening, wherever you're listening around the globe, and we do have a fairly large internet international audience. I'm sure everybody does now. It's no big deal. But one of Head On Radio Network's associates is in Australia. They have connections all around the planet. Not bad for a kid from West Virginia. So. Tune in tonight. Just stay with MikeMolloy.com, and Ben will start the web streaming of Bob Kincaid's program immediately after. How about that? Technology is wonderful, isn't it? This is from the Washington Post. An Al-Qaeda associate captured by the CIA and subjected to torture, they say harsh interrogation, subjected to torture techniques, said his jailers later told him they had mistakenly thought he was the number three man in the organization's hierarchy and a partner of Osama bin Laden, according to newly released excerpts from a 2007 hearing. Abu Zubaydah, speaking in broken English, according to the new transcript of a combatant status review tribunal held at the U.S. military prison in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, said, quote, they told me, sorry, we discover that you are not number three, not a partner, not even a fighter, end quote. Now, you can go to the WashingtonPost.com website and find the story, CIA Mistaken on High-Value Detainee, and then you can go to the PDF file, the actual transcript from the Combatant Status Review Tribunal held at Guantanamo. They told me, sorry, we discover you are not number three, not a partner, not even a fighter, end quote. Now, remember, Bush described Abu Zubaydah in 2002 as Al-Qaeda's chief of operations. Yeah. Turns out, intelligence, military, and law enforcement sources told the Washington Post this year that officials later concluded he was a Pakistan-based fixer for radical Islamist ideologues, but not part of Al-Qaeda, much less one of its leaders. Abu Zubaydah told the 2007 panel of military officers at the detention facility in Cuba, according to the transcript, that, quote, doctors told me that I nearly died four times, end quote, and that he had endured, quote, months of suffering and torture, end quote, on the false premise that he was an Al-Qaeda leader. Abu Zubaydah was subjected 83 times to waterboarding. He is a Palestinian, and he was held at a secret CIA facility after his capture in Pakistan in 2002. Well, there you go. Despite Bush's rhetoric, Zubaydah's torture exposed nor foiled any plots, a point that one of his interrogators confirmed during a congressional hearing last May. The portion of the 2007 Combatant Review Status Hearing transcript discussed his treatment at CIA black sites. The portion that discussed his treatment was, quote, blacked out for eight consecutive pages, end quote. This is what Bush sold the country's soul for. This is it, right here. This is it. Jesus God. Okay. Now, the accused 9/11 mastermind, remember him? Excuse me. You remember Khalid Sheikh Mohammed? Transcripts released yesterday show that alleged 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed says he made up stories to appease his interrogators. At his 2007 Gitmo hearing, he said, I make up stories. He says he told his questioners he didn't know the location of Osama bin Laden and he was tortured as a result. Where is he? Mohammed said, I don't know. Then he tortured me. Then I said, yes, he is in this area, or this is Al-Qaeda, which I don't know him. I said, no, they torture me. Yet at the same military tribunal hearing, the Associated Press reported, Mohammed ticked off a list of 29 terror plots in which he took part. The transcripts were released as part of a lawsuit in which the ACLU is seeking documents about the Bush crime family's terror detainee programs. I did 29 terror plots. Oh, yes, yes. Please stop killing me now. Underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
You know, we haven't talked tonight, and I hope we can tomorrow night about this crazy healthcare fiasco that's going on in this country right now. It really is. I'm not quite sure what Barack Obama is trying to do except get something, anything passed, which we'll talk about it tomorrow. But Eric writes in regarding healthcare. He calls it simple logic. He says, "Hi, Mike. Healthcare is the right wing's biggest fear. If the U.S. gets public healthcare, the Republicans will never be in power again. No one will chance losing their health care by voting in the Republican Party ever again, even the low-income Limbots. The Republicans are fighting for their existence." Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that or considered that. Yeah, the past, that's why there is such a concentrated effort. There's an attack on Obama that is based purely in race. There's an attack on you and me with these god-awful commercials that are trying to convince us yet again that we really don't want, you know, public health care. We don't want that. We don't want public health insurance. No. Because then some bureaucrat will be telling you whether or not you can have your appendectomy, which is what's happening right now, except there's no government bureaucrat as cold or sick or degenerate as the bureaucrats that are working for these health insurance companies. And they're not health insurance. They're sickness insurance. And they're not sickness insurance. They're give us your money, your premiums, and then file your claim and watch us knock them down. That's what they are, and you know, as well as I do. Rose is calling from Pompano Beach.
Hi.
In Florida. Hey, Rose.
Is this you, Mikey?
Yeah, yes, it is.
I called you one night, and I gave you a little, like, a little here and there. I won't tell you that right now. But I called about a mother of a draft-age son who refuses to fight.
Yes.
Remember me?
I do.
Well, whatever that. I don't care about that.
Okay.
But I was just listening to all about the health care and all this and that.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to talk. I want you to ask me a question.
How old are you?
68 next month.
Okay. What color eyes do you have?
Brown.
What's your favorite food? Where are we going with this, Rose?
I don't care. I just want you to ask me something really important.
How do you figure the circumference of a circle?
The circumference of a circle?
Yeah, the circumference.
I don't think it's round.
What?
Round? Are we talking about the same thing?
Yeah, how do you figure? You said ask you questions. How do you figure the circumference of a circle?
Well, I figure your brain is really working pretty good, and I'm following it.
It's pi times the diameter.
Well, let me tell you something. When Wilma happened, I was like, I didn't have a radio. I had nothing. And I'm thinking everybody's cuckoo.
Yeah.
And I got you on there.
Yeah.
And I said, finally, somebody thinks like me. Everybody tells me I'm cuckoo.
Yeah, well, okay.
And I listen to you.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not. Because listen to me.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah, I'm listening.
I always say, listen to me.
You do.
Because I am really 90% okay.
Okay. Good.
I have three children.
Uh-huh.
I raised them myself.
Wow.
My daughter just turned 49.
Yeah.
I have a gay son.
Yeah.
I have a son that married a girl from China. I have a Chinese
grandchild.
Baby.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm doing good.
Are you Jewish?
No.
Oh, I was going to say, with a Chinese grandbaby, it would be a real toss-up. Is it Judaism or Confucianism?
Nope.
Yeah.
I was born, supposedly, I was supposed to be a Catholic.
You were supposed to be a Catholic?
And I don't believe in being a Catholic.
I
don't believe in all that bullshit.
Ah, no! No, you can't. You can't say that. You can't say that, Rose. Now, Rose, bad Rose, bad Rose. Rose needs a medical intervention, quick. All right, Rose, let me try this one more time, okay? You may listen to our program on the internet or Sirius or XM, but We broadcast over the air. That's our primary broadcast mode, over the air. And words like that can't be used over the air. Now, I know it's really crazy. I can say the words I say, and they're acceptable. But anything referring to animal excrement is verboten. So, okay, Rose. Thank you. Okay, Chad is calling from Kensington, Ohio. Hey, Chad.
Long time no talk. Oh, that was funny.
You've told me this before, but where's Kensington?
It's east of Canton, about a half hour.
Yeah, I got you. All right.
Yeah, well, long time no talk. It's good to hear you guys.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I'm glad you called in.
Yeah, I was telling, and that was Kathy answering the phone.
It was, yes.
Yeah, I was telling Kathy, I just got done reading Ron Suskind's book, The 1% Doctrine.
Oh, yeah, isn't that good?
Oh, man, on page, I finally found it while I was waiting. It's on page 100. Coleman, CIA guy, told the FBI that this guy is insane, certifiable, split personality. Remember, he was entering it in his diary in like three different personalities.
Now, who is that, Zubeda?
Yeah.
That he was crazy.
Yeah, and right. the end of that same paragraph is, he was expendable. You know, the greeter, Joe Louis in the lobby of Caesar's Palace.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's how they pegged Zubeda.
Oh, it's just, I can't believe it's just now, you know, the Senate getting around. You did say it was a Senate committee, right?
Well, the ACLU sued to have the transcripts released from one of these, not military tribunal, but a hearing in front of military officers at Guantanamo, where transcripts were recorded about the questions being asked and the answers from people like Sheikh Khalid Mohammed and Abu Zubaydah and some of these people that Bush and Cheney tried to convince America were these monster terrorists who are about ready to drop all kinds of hell and bombs and death and destruction on the U.S. And by the governments, not the government, but the U.S. military's own, the military's own transcripts. These guys were not that. Especially.
Marge. Sorry about that. Especially. Yeah, Bush knew.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
You're going to let me look bad on this, are you?
Well, oh, really? Is that what Susskind says?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I can't remember what page that's on, but I think it was the phrase was, you're not going to let me lose face on this.
You know, this makes me hate Democrats even more. Because especially Pelosi and Reid, who conspired to make sure that this criminal son of a bitch, see, and I can say that, George W. Bush escaped impeachment and removal from office. And look what they've done. Look what they've done.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an endless stream now that's starting to come out. This is the reason Cheney's been out there like a frothing, rabies-infected dog trying to convince anyone who will listen, no, we did the right thing. Oh, we did the right thing.
Yeah, because he smells prosecutions coming.
Well, the truth will out, and it's coming out, even though we have a completely whored out media. We have a political class that couldn't care less about the truth if it tried. The only thing left are people who just get together and talk about this, I guess. I don't know. Jesus, I get so sick of it, Chad.
Oh, me too. Hey, Mike, before I go, I just, like, tell all your audience to, like, you know, go down to New Orleans and spend some money and have some food and some drinks, because I'm going to be there in a couple weeks, and the city needs it, man.
Now, what are you going to be doing down there?
I met a few people online who were setting up a relief effort right after Katrina.
Oh.
Well, Andrea Garland, she'd love me to say her name. You may have even spoken to her at one time. But we met through a political message board, Smirking Chimp, you know that one.
Right, right.
And I sent a little cash along, and she sent me a beautiful letter of thanks that said, you know, if you ever come to New Orleans, you know, you got a place to stay. And I went down that April after the storm, and I've been there like 15 times, 16 times since then. Mm-hmm. It's like my second home. I spent all my vacation down there, and I just love that city. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I haven't been there in about 10 years, but and plan to go back. Definitely plan to go back. Chad, thanks, man.
Yeah,
appreciate
take care, Mike.
All right, call in again. Love to hear from you. Rose called back. I hung up on her. Yeah, I did. You can't talk about animal excrement. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with it, but, you know, to say bolt, you know. But, so what did you tell Rose, who should have been born a Catholic? You said bye-bye? We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Into a cold, dark space.
For the hour, thanks to Ben Birch and Bruce Enberg and Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf and Sharon Gordy for all the positive energy for the program. The program engineered and produced by Kathy Bay. And stick around right after we go off the air. MikeMalloy.com on the web stream. Bob Kincaid, replay of his program tonight on the Head On Radio Network, so stick around for that. All right, here you go, from Mongo the Muser, who writes in, Mike, interesting idea you have, the notion of moving into other topics before we all stroke out in the midst of our righteous fuming. He's referring to what I talked about right at the beginning of the program tonight, in case you missed it. Mongo writes, I don't know about you, but I'm ready to let Texas slip out of the Union, if only so we have a place to ship every last Republican, then cordon off the entire place, set the claymores, and let the people get on with their real lives. One last time, then. These sleazeweasel Republicans have broken the country, broken as in flat-busted, broken as in broken down like an old shotgun, and broken as in completely ruined. Really, I've had enough of the me party, rhymes with GOP, and ready to move into news we can use. We folk from the Us Party, in honor of the founding principles of the U.S., of which we have allowed much to perish. Instead of stripping our gears, brains, and spirits, how about some news you can use segments? Geez, the list must be endless. Think about all the survival and farming and rustic living knowledge we have lost in the last 100 years. Granted, we can't all farm a piece of asphalt, but we must have a lot we can share on how to set up alternate lifestyles. Info on bartering, ways of getting through. Surely listeners will have contributions on all sorts of homemade wisdom. There could be room for a lot of interesting soul-filling items one would not be able to find anywhere. Humor, music, poetry. Think about the Great Depression and the types of programs that would have been hands-on helpful and even a little uplifting. By the way, some sweet old tunes from the 20s and 30s could be interesting. I like the idea of the early Dixieland. Cheers, Mongo the Muser. P.S. Even if you devote only a mix of such things with the current program, we'll still have some relief and release from our skyrocketing blood pressure from the daily dew. Well, there you go, Kathy. No, it's a great idea, Mongo. But the problem is, I'm afraid that I just wonder how much audience we would retain if we made that dramatic a shift, although it certainly makes sense. It is logical from the standpoint that sitting here every night beating our gums and getting absolutely no forward traction, and we're not. We really are not. Come on, let's be real. We simply are not. It seems to be an exercise in utter absolute futility. And Mongo the Muser is right. And I'm sure you thought about it too, True Seeger. I know we have here at the Malloy Program. If all these predictions that seem to be coming to fruition, I mean the really bad ones about the meltdown of the economy, the end of American empire, we're not sure what's going to happen, are we? Kathy and I decided, as an aside here, Kathy and I decided a couple of days ago to dip into the last little pool of investment money that we have for this radio venture and buying as large a generator as we can, so that when the power does implode, we will be able to stay on the air for a while, if that were to happen. Yeah, gasoline-driven generators. So, and plus the fact that we have a lot of podcast subscribers, and I don't think anything of that nature would happen for quite some time. So if you're not a podcast subscriber, dear God, come on. Seriously, what are you waiting for? We seem to have reached a plateau. And the subscriptions to the podcast are just like dribbling in. Come on, folks. It's 25 cents a show. That's what it costs if you buy the podcast subscriptions for a year, $59.40 a year. but we're determined. We are absolutely determined to keep doing what we're doing. We are not dependent on any network to stay on the air. We cannot be fired. We can't. Unless Kathy says to me, "You're fired. Give me that microphone." We cannot be fired no matter what we do. I can be fined if I say, you know, nasty boo-boo words on the air. But in that regard, this program is unique. And I'm serious. It is. So if you want to help us keep it going, now's the time to do it. Seriously. Absolutely seriously. Just go to MikeMolloy.com and subscribe to the podcast. It is priced to deal with the recession / depression that we're in. It's just not that much money. I understand. Saying it's not that much money is a relative statement, but for most of the people listening to this program, I don't think it is. So, Mongo the Muser's suggestion of switching gears to the point where it may come to that. It may come to that. Because I do get the sense, don't you? So many times, if you spend any amount of time during the day looking at CNN or even your local news, although your local news is just chock-a-block with murder and mayhem on a local basis, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, and it leads, and it leads, and it leads until they finally get to the weather. Oh, and the stock market is up 18 points. You notice that about local news. That's nothing new. That happened years ago. How many people were killed and what were the circumstances, and bring on the grieving family members and yada, yada, yada. And they do grieve. It's horrible. Not the time when a TV camera should be thrust into their faces. But and if you look at CNN or MSNBC, or God forbid, if you watch that putrid Fox network during the day, really, after about 20 minutes, don't you feel like you want to open a vein? You don't? Well, then you're really in trouble. So, I don't know. It's something to consider. We'll accept emails about this, too. If you want to write, just drop me a quick line, a couple of sentences, no big deal, about maybe changing the format to incorporate or switch exclusively to, as Mongo the Muser puts it, news you can use. I don't know. What do you think? I'm certainly over. Well, I don't have a program director to tell me what to do. I'll listen to you guys. I mean, give me some suggestions if you want to. If you like the way it is, not like, bad word. If you have come to rely on this program the way it is, okay. We'll stick with it. Don't forget, stay tuned online, MikeMolloy.com, for Bob Kincaid. And all next week, Brad Friedman will be filling in for me. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Molloy.